You're listening to Vatican Radio.
With the reform of the Vatican's banking system in progress, one way of putting in place Pope Francis's teaching on the economy could be investment in local micro-investment projects. That's according to Father Seamus Finn of the Oblates of Mary Immaculate. He is the board chairman of the Interfaith Center on Corporate Responsibility, which comprises nearly 300 organizations and collectively represents over $100 billion in invested capital, as well as being the director of the Oblate Investment Fund. Nearly a year on from the release of Pope Francis's encyclical Laudato Si, I spoke to him about how the Holy Father's challenges to the global economy have been put into practice.
I think there are a number of things happening, and I think we're at the stage now of trying to practically apply the challenges that the Holy Father has put out there about the economic system that we have. So, very simply, how in fact do we really respond to the globalization of indifference that he seems to feel is one of the consequences of the affluence of the first world and the domination of the first world in terms of the economic system? So I think people are now nearly a year after the encyclical and also his exhortation, Evangelii Gaudium, looking to say, you know, yes, I agree with the Holy Father on these questions, these opportunities, and these challenges. What can I do about it as an individual or in my parish or as an institution that I'm responsible for? So I think that's where we're at, and I think some good things are happening, and hopefully they're going to bear fruit.
You're part of the Oblate Investment Pool that's based in the United States that invests a lot of money from religious organizations and gives them the opportunity to invest it in a faith-conscious manner. Do you have any projects to put into effect that which Pope Francis has been talking about?
We in the Oblate Fund for sure have spent a lot of time looking at some of the private equity initiatives that are out there, and specifically sorting through, because there's lots of these funds, ones that we think align better with the mission of the congregation and the responsibilities of the fund and Catholic social teaching. And so that's kind of a first cut that we take when we look at some of these funds. So there are about 7 funds at the moment that we have money in. 1 8 Miles is in Africa. Elevar is in India and Colombia and Peru. There are also others that we're looking at in the Caribbean. So interesting, because I think some individuals out there and groups of individuals have come forward and constructed funds that are specifically targeted at addressing the issues related to energy, agriculture, housing, telecommunication, financial services, and they feel that they've come up with ways in which they can creatively do that in a way that's profitable for investors and that serves populations that now are underserved or that governments are not able to. So an example of one of those funds is an alternative energy fund in the Caribbean. You think of the Caribbean, then you probably think of sunshine and beaches, right? And so I think these folks have been diligently looking at, can we take solar energy, can we take wind energy, and develop it at a scale where that the local jurisdictions, the local governments who have been unable to deliver enough electricity to these populations will say, we like what you're doing, we're going to support it. And so that's one of the funds that we've put some money into, but there are a number of others. And I think what's happening now is that people are out there very energetically looking to identify other types of funds like that, whether it's going to invest in agriculture, whether it's going to provide, you know, to local farmers the kind of capital that they might need to expand their farm, to have better seeds, to get it to market in better condition so they get paid a better price. There's lots of pieces in there that you may be trying to address. And so that's the exciting part for me, that we're actually getting down into the lower levels of questioning about how do I do this and how do I do it well. I think one of the big challenges, and I think everybody's serious about this, is how can you, you know, be fairly certain that you're going to achieve what you set out to do? So putting in place measurements that allow you to actually say, here's how we're going to evaluate the end result of this project and the investments, And then we'll be able, after whatever number of years is involved, 4 or 5 years, to say we accomplished what we were trying to do, we helped this number of people, and more people had electricity than had it before, or were going to have it. So I think that's the exciting part, or the energetic part, and I think trying to get that down into not just religious congregations, but to dioceses and to local individuals who may not be very rich, but they're still saying, you know, I have some money, I want to invest it, I can't give it away because I need it and I'll need it in the future for my retirement or my send my kids to school or whatever. So they're willing to look at ways in which they can invest the money, be helpful, and at the same time not abandon some other responsibilities that they may have.
The things that you invest in, are these mostly major corporations, or do you also practice microfunding, microinvestments at a community level in different parts of the world, especially in poorer parts of the world?
Yeah, I think one of the funds we're invested in, Elevar, which is focused primarily in India, is very much into microfinance. I think the challenge with microfinance always has been that in the very beginning, when folks started doing it, it was very labor intensive. So you had to go around on a weekly basis and check if somebody was doing what they said they did with the money they borrowed so they wouldn't get into trouble. You had to collect interest. You had to document it in a notebook. So, you know, technology has made that so much easier. So you don't have to actually go around every week. And there are other ways in which you check on whether somebody's actually got their project in order and if they're getting in trouble or if they're doing extra well in it. So I think what some of these funds have been able to do then is to make a microfinance at a scale where it can be break even or it can be profitable, depending on where it's happening. The same thing is true. I think, sometimes people are willing to, they may be willing to invest money or lend money, and they're not looking for whatever the market rate of return is. They're not looking for 5%. They may be willing to say, you know, I'll lend you the money if you return it with 1% interest. I think I'm doing good in helping this project, and at the same time, I'm getting back my money, and I'm getting making a little profit. So there are a variety of engagements like that, a variety of ways in which folks are looking at it, and I think it's looking broadly. Each situation is very different, each country is very different. That's why it requires. One of the most valuable ingredients in all of this is local knowledge in the local community. There isn't the one-size-fits-all. You can't, you know, simply do it from your office in New York or London. Having a relationship or a partnership with people in local communities is really important. And I think, you know, the other side of this is and I'm not an expert certainly in this area, but there are lots of tools being developed. If you're a bank, if you're the Vatican Bank, you take in capital like lots of banks do. You have it for a period of time. You may be investing it. You may be doing the usual things that banks do. And then somebody is going to come and say, well, I need my money back, or you're going to loan it to somebody. So is there a way, I think, in which you can actually tag it when it goes in? And measure while the bank has that money over the period of time, whatever that period of time is, what good did it do? Who did it serve? Was it congruent with Catholic teaching? Did it help the poor? In choice points where you have to make, were those priorities that the Pope is talking about in terms of human dignity and participation and the marginalized and the impoverished, is it responding to some of those needs? And what I think is really exciting is that there are lots of folks out there that, at least in the church circle, we're not often in contact with them. We don't often meet them on a regular basis, but they're applying their knowledge, their minds, their research to some of these questions, and they're saying, you know, this could help our church be a better actor in these spaces. And of course, you know, with innovation, you always have to test it, right? It's like you're, you know, experimenting in your garage to come up with the latest little advancement that you think is going to be helpful in some situation. So they're in a period now, I think, of testing some of those tools. I think they're going to be extremely useful. Some of them will be very helpful. Some of them perhaps need some refinement. But I think what it does for us in the church community is it gives us a chance to walk the talk. It gives us an opportunity to say, we want to respond to, you know, what's in the encyclical about climate change or about agriculture or farming or healthcare or education. And we want to do it in such a way that we feel like we're connected to it, but also we're making an important contribution. We're not answering the whole question, but we are, through our finances and through our assets, being very specific and being very targeted so that making money and making profit is not the only thing we're looking for. We want to be socially responsible. We want to be environmentally responsible. And we want to be living out the gospel.
These are gospel virtues, but even in the Old Testament, it says never enslave your neighbor through lending. Mm-hmm. So it would almost be against these vulture funds where you lend money at an extremely high rate. And that's the point of view of the person borrowing. Mm-hmm. But the question is, as investors, obviously we want a good rate of return on our money. Mm-hmm. So how can an investor invest without enslaving someone?
I mean, it's a good question. And I think the fact that you raise the teachings that are in the Hebrew scripture and in the Christian scriptures, but also if you look at most of the major faiths, and particularly in the monotheistic faiths, they very clear about the question that you raise. And it wasn't until, 15th century that we became comfortable in places like Venice and Florence in any kind of lending and being able to get some level of return because of the risk we were taking. If I was lending you money to take a cargo of something out of Venice to Africa, that's a pretty risky venture. And so I wanted an extra premium because I could lose the whole thing if the ship went down, right? And so the question was, where does the scripture fit in that regard? And so there are lots of those very kind of basic teachings in the scriptures and in the Quran and in other scriptural books that are important for us to reflect on because they're kind of basic and we've kind of often don't pay attention to them because we say, yeah, we know that. But they kind of probe at a different level, I think, about the exact question you're saying. So it may be appropriate to lend money to somebody who's a shopkeeper who wants to make their shop bigger or open a new set of products or try something different in terms of expanding. But it may not be. Somebody goes and looks at that and says, this is not a good model in terms of expansion. Or maybe I think what you need is a grant and not a loan. Or what you need is a loan and not an investment. So I think the challenge as I see it right now is that when one looks at a situation, whether in any part of the world, what is the right kind of financing that will help the project? And for the investor, I think that's what we always have to do, because sometimes if we invest money, we may be leading somebody in 5 years to being heavily in debt and therefore enslaved. So that's not a good investment to make. And now, we're not perfect and we make mistakes. But in those situations, it's probably better to say, maybe you ought to apply to the government for a grant. Or maybe you ought to look to family to help you out of this. But an investment is not the right thing. And I think that's sometimes, obviously, some folks don't have any particular ethical or moral bearings on these questions. And so, you know, then they're going to take people to court and it's going to be a long protracted kind of working out of the situation that eventually, you know, is not going to work well for the person with whom you invested or that you put money into.
And of these projects that you have going on, are any of them in conjunction with the Vatican or do you have any hopes in that regard?
I'm hopeful that I think as the Vatican continues to, particularly the APSA and the IOR and the Vatican Bank, I think they've made great progress in the reforms that have been put in place. I think they've responded well to the challenges of the European Union in terms of trying to fit more accurately and more transparently into the larger community. I'm hopeful that they will begin now to look at some of these projects and say, you know, we're not as rich as people think we are, but we could profitably and responsibly advise our clients or invest some of our capital in some of these funds and do it in a way that we might then hold up and say, look, we are in these particular instances responding to the challenge that the Holy Father has put out there for all of us. And I think it would do wonders for their reputation and for their image, which sometimes have not always come out well.
In terms of that image, one of the recent things, scandals in this VatiLeaks too, has to do with the amount of local real estate that the Vatican owns here in Rome and in other, even in other parts of the world. Would foreign investment maybe, or investments in poorer parts of the world, could this be an option for the Vatican?
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, I don't know much about how much real estate they own and what the value of it is, but I look at some of the funds that we're involved in, and, you know, the IFC, which is the investment arm of the World Bank, is involved. The African Development Bank is involved. The Asia Development Bank is involved. So there's an opportunity there with any of these funds for the Vatican to say, you know, those are fairly reliable institutions. They have good reputations in terms of transparency and accountability. So it would seem to me that in those instances, they might find the level of security and stability to invest if those other institutions were doing that. Alongside of that, however, I think there are also some very interesting smaller projects going on where people are mapping, you know, the land owned by local dioceses and local churches around the world, particularly in Africa. So if you have 100 acres, what are you doing with it? If you had more capital, might you think about a way to make it a source of income for the diocese, for the charitable works of the church? If you had professional and technical expertise, would you consider doing some farming on it? Working with some local entrepreneurs. So that would be a position that I think the Vatican, working directly with the local diocese, would be in a unique position to say, well, we think this is a good investment and we'll try and recruit other investors, but we're also willing to put some skin in the game.
That was Oblate of Mary Immaculate, Father Seamus Finn, Chairman of the Board of the Interfaith Center on Corporate Responsibility.